This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hi, Tom Kerridge here on the BBC Good Food Podcast. This week, I'm speaking to my friend Mersal Saik of Q-Point about her favourite dish. Now, kabuli pilau is how I would say it, but how would you say it?
Kabuli?
Kabuli?
Pilau.
Pilau. Okay, kabuli pilau. Now, in my head, I'm going, it's going to be about rice, and you'll tell us a little bit more about it later. But Mersal, let me tell you a little bit about her story, was born in Kabul in Afghanistan, and at only a few weeks old, her family were forced to evacuate their home and give it up to members of the Taliban during the 1990s civil war. Mersal's family made their way to Mumbai, India, and then later to Hackney in London. Now, I've got to be honest, I've known Mersal for a few years now, and she is one of the most incredible, amazing people I've ever met, like in the world of food. Mersal, you've got an incredibly fascinating life story and philosophy to share. Can you tell us a little bit more?
I can. I mean, wow, what an introduction. To I guess very much when you are displaced so often, you can't really call Kabul your home, you can't call Mumbai your home, you can't really call London your home. And for so much of your life, you're like, ah, where am I? Very, very, very confused on where you belong, what your identity is. That as I've grown older and actually moving into food and moving into this business has helped me really find my identity and go, oh, I'm not this, this or this. I'm all of these.
So how did you get, how did you get into food? How did that all tie in together then?
I got into food a bit accidentally because, you know, you hear this thing of everyone trying to do internships in London and this. Well, to afford an internship, you need a certain amount of money to be able to do that, rent, bills, and it's not very socioeconomically friendly to do internships. So during the internship, didn't come from a very wealthy background, you see. So I'd work at this market, street food market, and I was like, wow, this is incredible, learned so much about the street food scene. But then when I invited my own family or other people from the borough that were very diverse, they couldn't eat anywhere and they couldn't drink very much besides the basics. And it was already very expensive for them to get in. And it just kind of showed me, I was like, wow, like food is so amazing. So bringing everyone together, it's this amazing integrated experience of all these identities. And yet, there are spaces that don't fully embrace the multi-pronged way to do that. They just kind of go, oh, this is a great dish. Let me put it here. And then, and you're like, no, we shouldn't be looking at it with such a small focus. We should go, how can we open up this incredibly, that looks cultural space to cultural people and integrate them all together? And I think that's when it kind of really started for me. And then that's how my identity of who am I? Am I Afghan? Am I this? Well, with Q-Point, it was like, I'm British Afghan. I love ketchup and Afghan chutney. And I like to mix them. That's my favourite thing.
So you mentioned Q-Point there. That's your kind of like your setup, your restaurant or your base, which isn't entirely necessarily a restaurant. Tell us just a little bit about it and how you, because you were studying political history at university. Okay. And then there must have been this pivotal moment where you decided that that's not where you want to go. This is what I'm going to do. Food is what I love doing. How do I put it all together?
That's the most fascinating thing. I didn't realize how much my political philosophy and political history degree would come into Q-Point in so much in like actually meeting you. A lot of what you've seen me on stage and talking is the postmodern aspects of literally like how to take something, a symbol that is so representative, and turn it on its head, mix it around a little bit, and create something else. It's why the British flag is always stuck to the Afghan flag. It's why I wear the poppy and try and get more racialized communities to understand that the poppy doesn't just represent this one war or these two wars or this. It represents all the wars and all of the loss. And I think that way you kind of really learn that people are segregating because they are like, this is yours, this is yours, this is this country, this is this food. But what if we were to mesh it all up, not call it fusion, but literally go, nah, You know, we're in a world that's ever changing, constant immigration, constant change of population. Why don't we start with something like food that everybody needs to have? Yes, you've got the very fancy food and the this and that, but it's actually a human basic need. And if it's a human basic need, can't we start here and go, okay, well, we all want to eat food. We all need to eat food. How can we make it that we can all enjoy eating this food together? What's stopping us there? What's stopping us from understanding that these people are welcome here and not here? Is it marketing? How can we change that in food? And then go through all of the departments of food and go, well, where is it that people are feeling like they can't come in here, that they can't eat in here, that they can't create this, the word authentic that I hate.
So you've mentioned the food there, and you say, but what is the sort of food that you serve? Okay,
because we're
very fortunate that right now we're sat in the middle of London, and it's one of the most diverse and culturally creative and embracing cultures, particularly for food cultures. Like, everybody wants to eat. You can eat out so many different styles and so many different types of food. But what sort of food is it? You were talking there about ketchup and just the merging it and Afghan and a base level kind of foods and understanding, and then mixing it with, well, I mean, I know you do a lot of smoking, Josh, yeah, your head chef. Like, how have you combined those sort of two things together?
Well, he's very British. He's of mixed heritage, but he did not grow up with that other heritage. So he very much grew up with his English-British identity. Family come from World War II veterans. Beef dripping on toast was his granddad's favourite thing, and it was on our first menu.
You don't really have a restaurant site as such, do you? You try to reach out into the community in a slightly different way. Talk to me. Tell me how you do it.
Through our Q Point Kitchen.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we run a social impact arm called Q Point Kitchen that tries to help racialized individuals and majorities, not minorities, in the industry grow their generational wealth through like English language acquisition, financial management, business development. Some of our chefs are now, Shay wants to start her own little project, so we're like moving into that. And for us, it's really important to create the network, access these individuals, and help them see that the reason perhaps that they might be struggling is due to systemic issues that are easily fixable, that there's a game and these are the rules. And sometimes because we lack generational wealth, we don't know the rules. And I think for me, just seeing the growth and the fact that, yeah, we do this amazing food and I love it, but we go around consulting people and teaching different people how to be more inclusive.
So you've very much found yourself now as a bit of a leader of a band of people that are putting things together through food and trying to reach out to communities. But what was the sort of food that you ate when you were growing up? Because obviously you've moved around, then moving from Afghanistan, moving to India and then to Hackney. What was the food like that you were eating as a youngster?
Afghan food, the Kabli palau is our quintessential fancy jeweled meat like amazing dish. So you would only get that maybe once every 2 weeks or if guests were coming. Lubia, which Attila has in his book, which is a very simple, it's the poor man's pulse dish. It's my favourite dish. It's one of my favourite dishes. It's literally three ingredients.
And what are they?
Red kidney beans, onions, fresh garlic, red kidney beans. The source of the red kidney bean is so important. And then everything else is just season. It's all about the seasoning of just this simple thing. And it's great because it's really good for people that couldn't afford a lot of meat. It's got a lot of pulse. We have a lot of pulse and it's a vegan dish.
And it's quite high in protein. So red kidney beans are actually really high in protein. So where you wouldn't normally, so you normally associate proteins as coming from animal product, actually, the pulse is, and very filling.
So filling. And so, and if you look at it, because of the different socioeconomic backgrounds of the provinces, you see a lot of these, the Burani Banjon that you've seen a lot of, that's, you know, a big dish, but that's the more fancy, that's a very fancy vegan
dish. What is
dish.
That? What?
That is the, Burani means like low and slow, and Banjon means aubergine. And it's like a low and slow aubergine dish that has every array of spices, garlic, tomato, and it's served beautifully. It's the look, the aesthetic of Afghan food's really important. It needs to look like different jewels. Like, and that one has the yogurt at the bottom and then on the top, the dried mint. We serve it, as you've seen, slightly differently because we're British Afghan.
Yeah.
So we've added some crispy onions. We've got rid of the yogurt and made it a vegan sauce.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Textually as well, though, it's very clever, and the spicing and the flavouring that's come through. Now, I've seen that at food festivals that you've been working on and being busy throughout the summer, spreading the name and showing what you do. But where you come to those cooking processes, do you leave a lot of that in the hands of Josh, or is Josh's then understanding of Afghan cookery come through you? You as a cook. So who taught you to cook? Is that mum. Something? Mum
is incredible. Mum is a chef of, what is amazing about, and not just mum, aunt. So every different, out of the women in my family, the cooks, the chefs, everyone has what they'd say they do the best of. So when it comes to the cobbly palau, that's a big, long process. My aunt is declared to do the best brown sauce for it, which is the what gives it the flavour, the jeera, the ginger, the, everything that's cooked off with the meat.
So what's a brown sauce? Because in my end, a brown sauce is a squeezy bottle like ketchup.
I know.
So what is the brown sauce?
You call it the caramelization. So, you know, you've got a normal white rice. The cobbly is different. So separately, after you've cooked your meat juices in the pressure cooker, there's a bunch of juice, there's that meat that you want.
Well, listen, why don't we get onto it? Yeah. Why don't you tell us the full process of the cobbly palau, right? So exactly what it is, what it represents, why it's so special to you, and how are the ingredients put together? What's the cooking process?
So why it's so special, the cobbly may represent cobble, but in Iran, they have a very similar dish. And in Syria, in Lebanon, in Iraq, this bejeweled rice is a staple to so many Middle Eastern dishes. And to Afghanistan, it's the cobbly. And for a country that has 123 different dialects and tribes and is constantly at civil war because of that, to have one unifying thing is a big deal for us. To have the different tribes all go, No, we're all on board with the cobbly. You're like, but it shares the name of the name. Oh, you guys are good. So for me, it's like, wow, if it comes to food history, this is a historical, important dish. And everyone has a different way. You can tell which tribe they are, if they make a more caramelized brown sauce, if they make it more meat heavy. So it's really indicative of identity.
So what are the key ingredients? Talk us through as if it's a recipe. What would I need to start off with?
So do you want very exact, like, measurements?
Don't give away like historic family secrets here, mate. You can if you want. But tell us the key process of the ingredients.
So you need lamb. You've got, so the main process, it's a bejeweled rice with meat. It's not a biryani. The lamb is cooked separately. And it's like you have to get to the bottom to get to it. And you're like, oh, wow.
So is it a slow-cooked lamb dish?
Slow-cooked lamb. A pressure cooker would be best. Like, and that's why with us, our brisket and these work really well with a cobbly. Even though it's completely alien, you wouldn't have a smoked meat. You'd have a pressure-cooked lamb. But we do these other things, so it works really well. And then it's the process of the rice. The chefs were all watching us like, I've never seen rice be steamed. What is your mum doing? Atul was coming over like, what is she doing? Like, what is going on? And I'm like, she drains her rice. And then after you drain it, you steam it on a low heat. And you have to wash your rice. You don't want that horrible starchiness. We usually do it the night before, but we didn't have enough time. So wash the rice. If you get that nasty, cloudy water when you put it in, you haven't washed it for long enough. That's going to ruin the whole.
So you need to get rid of all the starches
all
from the rice,
completely washed.
So what have you got? You've got this cooking process of lamb. Is that marinated at all? Is it slightly marinated?
Yeah, definitely. But you don't want your lamb to be as intense as your other lamb dishes, because the cobbly and the flavour of the brown of the lamb is going to be all over the rice.
Right.
So it's almost like literally steamed lamb. Do you know what I mean? Like,
okay,
it's
so not too powerful. And what cut are we using? Are we using shoulder or leg or breast of lamb?
Shoulder best. breast because it's nice and fatty and it's got those little bits. And yeah, like that's definitely into nice little fat chunks because you don't want giant bits, but you don't want these little bits that will dry up.
And do you roast it and fry it off first, get some colour on it? Or do
definitely,
you just...
Definitely, definitely. Okay. You've got a few onions in there with the lahma.
Yeah.
Little bit of garlic after that. You definitely roast it off, give it some colour, throw in all your array of cumin, Afghan jeera, ginger, spice, like paprika, cayenne, everything.
But not, now you're talking of spice here, and that's not spice as in hot.
No.
It's not burn your mouth
aroma,
hot.
No.
This is floral, this is fragrant, this is exciting, this is a rainbow collection of flavours that are coming in, but not something that's like blows your head off hot.
Afghan cooking is not spicy. They can't handle it. We literally can't. We're like, So we've got even our Afghan chutney when other South Asians in particular are like, what is this? And you're like, oh, it's very garlicky and very herby and there's a few green chilies. We can't stand a lot of hot, but we're aromatic.
Yeah.
And that's why Josh really likes learning about Afghan cooking because he also cannot handle hot. So he's like, aromatics.
But also
easy.
There's so many different flavours you can pull, particularly when you, you know, from your point of view, you do a lot of smoking. You want that smoky flavour. You want those kind of aromats to sing through rather than being overpowered by spice. So you cook the onions, the garlic, the lamb off, then you put in all the spices, then do you cover it with
You just pressure cooker. That's separate now. That's
right.
Cooking.
That's
you leave
cooking.
It on a low. Now you've moved into your water. The water's boiled. The oil is mixed in with the water. And then you throw your rice in.
Yep.
You need to watch this part the most. As it's boiling, it needs to not be cooked because it's going to get steamed after this. So if it's totally cooked, when it gets steamed, it will turn into what you call a shola, which is a wet rice, which is very famous in Afghanistan, but not what we're trying to make. And people make fun of people when their cobbli is not perfect. They're like, oh, you made a shola. You're like, no, don't be rude. Like, I did not. So this is the part where 4 or 5 minutes, it should be just breakable. Then you drain it. After draining it in a colander, put it back in the tub on a very low heat. And then you get some towels. This was the bit that was really fun in the kitchen. Mum was just getting towels. And you lift your lid and you cover the lid with the towels. And then you pop it straight back on just to allow it to steam properly. Josh kept trying to give my mum cling film. She was like, keep your cling film away from me. I don't want this cling film or your special steam. I want to do it my way.
So the heat of the rice where you first cooked it in that boiling water and oil, drained, then wrapped in a towel and just no extra liquid in it, just the actual heat of that rice is then continuing to steam.
Literally on a very low heat. And while we do that, typically I really should have fried off my carrots and sultanas, not raisins, as we found. Sultanas, everybody.
Okay.
because they're very, very important in the difference. And this is what's bizarre, is because it's quite a quintessentially British thing, but it's the most Afghan thing as well. And you have to fry them off. Don't grate your carrots. Again, the chefs are trying to mandolin. No, because they get greasy. You need thick, like rectangular little half a finger carrots. Yeah,
proper,
chunks, so they can caramelize rather than oil up. Caramelize them, caramelize the sultanas, put them away, don't mix
them. So that's a layer of sweetness that comes in there. They're dried fruit and the carrots have this beautiful sweetness.
And they're both caramelized, so they're a bit like they've got that real
sweetness.
So you're
cooking those sugars.
100%.
Lovely. Okay.
And then letting them dry on a little paper towel while that's getting done. Then you start on the pièce de résistance, which is the brown sauce.
Okay. So this is the bit I'm really interested in. What is the brand?
So I'll
sauce?
Be honest, as we've come to England, my mum has changed some of her things. And one of her favourite things...
She's changed a handed down recipe.
She says this thing that she found in England is the best thing. And you're going to laugh when you find out what it is the best thing that has made the best cobbly brown sauce she has ever seen. Josh was like, gravy browning. And I was like,
no.
Yeah, she had it in a little plastic bag so no one could see. So special. But so typically it's a mixture. Use soya sauce as well. But soya sauce, gravy browning, Afghan jeera, ginger, cumin, the typical spices, cook them off. I don't know what the name of the little star cloves are.
Star anise?
Probably.
Star anise or cloves?
Cloves.
Yeah, cloves. I mean,
fry me with them off.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Really powerful in flavour.
Very powerful.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You don't want a lot. You want
that'll be a clove. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've
got to go gentle on them because they're so punchy.
And then removed as soon as they're, you don't want it in the rice as well, those cloves.
No, because that'll crack your teeth.
Yeah.
Crack your teeth. You don't want to eat them. Okay, so the brown sauce, the secret ingredient to it is gravy browning.
And then you take the meat and the meat juice is added to that brown sauce. That's all mixed around, cooked slightly. So again, it's got a very light cook on it.
So like this is the point there where that meat now starts taking on the flavour separately from the brown sauce.
That's okay, it. So the meat's separated. We've taken it and we've put it away and we've taken all its sauce and we've mixed it into our other brown sauce. And then you add a bit
So you've still got the meat to one side?
Oh yeah, the meat is separate.
So all the resting juices that have come from the meat have now gone into the sauce. So you're creating this beautiful sauce.
Exactly.
So we've got three things here. We've got the drained meat, we've got the sauce, and then we've got the rice. Okay.
Exactly. And obviously the carrots and the raisins on the side as well. Everything's waiting because this is the bejeweled thing. It's plated very specifically.
Okay.
It's very specific. And when this is done, obviously a lot of oil. Then this is the moment where you're like, it's about to be plated, guys, which is like when the cobbly is plated, everyone must be seated because the phrase in Afghanistan, don't let the cobbly go cold. You know, like, cobbly, yashala. That's like move, run. So as soon as you add the brown sauce into the rice and mix it, then you get your giant tray for service. The meat goes at the bottom.
Yeah.
The rice goes at the top.
Yeah.
Then the carrots. Don't ever mix. It's not a biryani.
Okay.
Then the carrots. Then the raisins. Then you use a wooden spoon and you just make a few little holes.
Yeah.
For kind of just like, because it's very, very hot and the meat will be incredibly hot, just to let it breathe a bit. Then you put it on the table and they run.
Okay.
And that's a cobbly.
Everyone helps themselves.
Yeah.
I love that. So, I mean, there must be twists and variations from, like you were saying, there was 120 different tribes. So there must be various twists.
Massively.
And the way that the flavours come through and it's more aromatic in some spices one way or a different way of cooking. But actually,
it always looks the same.
It always looks the same.
So in Ghorband, in northern Afghanistan, they'll probably have they have some of the best fruits and veg in the world. They will have different things that they use. They will probably maybe not even steam the rice. They will do different things. It will be a different texture, but it will always look like a cobbly. We know what a cobbly looks like. You can identify it. And when Asians have so many rice dishes and people don't know that this is Iran, this is Afghanistan, this is that, when you see that symbology, you're like, that's Afghanistan, that's a cobbly palau, that's a vermicelli from Lebanon, this is this from that. It's important to us that these symbols are created, but then adapted to people's flavors. That way they can get, you know.
So merch. Do you think, I mean, that's obviously evolved over hundreds of years historically through Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. But now there's yourself and many other Afghan settlers here in the UK. Do you think the Kabbali will evolve and adapt into being having like UK versions of it?
Absolutely.
Has it already?
And I look forward to that. There are many people.
Are you going to be the pioneer of it?
I want to be. I mean, I've called it the London Cobbly Palau. You'll see that across things. And they're like, the what? I'm like, the London Cobbly Palau.
And what's the difference then? What do you do that makes it any different?
Guess. Caramelized onions.
So it sounds like you serve it for big family occasions and it's the sort of thing that you put together in the middle of the table. Would you ever do it though for just like three or four friends coming over? Is it the sort of thing that you would do just for a hangout?
6 to 7. I would never do it for, if it was smaller than that, you got to take the pressure cooker out, you've got to take the big, and if you make your rice in a small one, it's not going to be very good anyway.
And what about leftovers? Is there a way of using leftovers?
Oh,
what can you do with it?
Oh my God, my favourite thing that I learned here. So I love Chinese food. I love Chinese food. And I love to take a cobbly.
So was that not something that, I mean, that's not anything that you would have come across then in Afghanistan or in India? Was
Weirdly,
it?
You would. So in Afghanistan, one of our biggest tribes is the Azara tribe. And the Azara tribe is one of the oldest tribes of Afghanistan because it's the reason we have Buddhism and the reason that, you know, that religion of Buddhism was the very first. It's a East Mongolian-based tribe. They look very much East Asian as well, but they are the oldest, most amazing, incredible tribe of Afghanistan, yet targeted for the very fact that they have that ancestry. Their food, the Afghan dumplings, very similar to a dumpling that you'd have in East Asia.
Like a dim sum.
Yeah, soya sauce, a big thing in Afghan cooking. A lot of East Asian, because of our Mongolian brothers and then them actually being part and integral to our entire nation, we have a lot of dishes that are weirdly reminiscent, like, of East Asian cooking.
Okay.
The Oshak, we make a great noodle dish.
Yeah, I mean, I interrupted you then, but you were saying about how the Chinese influence for your leftovers, for your kabbali.
Egg fried. Cobbly palau. Egg fried cobbly palau. Like, I literally, like, there's so many things you could do with rice. Yeah, it's delicious. You could just have it again or whatever. But I love that my mum makes so many different variations of rice that just, like, heightening it and making it this delicious egg fried dish with then like chili flakes and just taking the Afghan chutney and turning that into its own sauce. You don't need anything else. You know, most people will literally, and in Lebanon.
So at this point, are you mixing the rice up? At this point, you've got the mix up.
I'm mixing it. I've chopped all my meat because I've only got a little bit of meat. So I'm like, cool, I'm going to fry that up. Get the rice up, egg, mix it all. If I need to add some
soy sauce,
little bit, yeah,
little bit of soy, little bit of chili. So you take it into this next one. I mean, to be honest, that sounds incredible as it is.
And then the raisins and carrots get even extra crispy, and you're like, this is amazing. Like, I love my egg fried rice.
I mean,
egg fried cobbly rice.
Honestly, that dish sounds absolutely fantastic. And is that friends, family? Sunday lunch? Is it a Sunday lunch special?
That's a Sunday lunch special. That's where the British, that dish that I've been telling you about, the British Afghan roast, and so many different people have never seen a half a Sunday roast and then a rice dish and this together. And we're like, here you go. They love it. They're like, I've never thought that a Sunday roast would go with rice. You're like, I know, but it does, doesn't it? It goes really well.
Yeah, amazing. yeah. And then any leftovers can turn it. You can sprinkle some chili flakes on it and egg fry it. It sounds amazing.
Very adaptable.
I'm going to ask you some quick fire questions, and it's got to be the first answer that pops into your head. Are you ready?
Ready.
What is your most well-thumbed and looked at cookery book?
Motherland, Melissa Thompson.
Great book. Melissa's food's amazing. Incredible. What music do you cook to?
Oh, that's interesting. Country and R&B.
Country?
Luke Combs, recently.
Honestly, I would not have gone with that being your first. Having known you for quite a while, that is not where I'd have gone with first. However, okay, you know, you constantly, you surprise me every time I meet you. You go, no way. Okay. A great cheap eats restaurant, pub, or market that you like visiting? Cheap. Great cheap one.
Cheap eats. Jimma Kitchen, Borough Market.
Nice. Okay. And tell me something that's always in your fridge.
Coffee.
Okay. Tell me a food that you've never tried.
Donkey bowls.
And you'd like to try?
I don't know. They just seem to be the hot topic at the moment, don't they? Have you tried them?
No, I've never tried it. Well, hot topic where? Where
on TikTok. I don't want to, but a part of me.
There's a massive reason why I'm not looking at TikTok all the time, and that's just reiterated it. What's your guilty pleasure? What's the food that you love eating that maybe people wouldn't think, what is she doing eating that?
Me and my friend have a thing where we go around London trying to find the best citrus desserts. And like, can we have a little rating card? So like, imagine just having a tart. I want to find the best lemon tart that London or the UK or wherever we go has to offer. So whenever we go to a patisserie, boulangerie, whatever, we'll get all of the lemon, leave everything else, just all the meringue, get me the tart, get me that weird little cake. And then we test it and we go, I'd rate that. So I've had about 10 different of this particular tart. I've had about a million of meringues. But that's one of my guilty pleasures.
So listen, one last question. What makes you optimistic for the future?
What makes me optimistic for the future? Such a big question. I am very optimistic for the future. I think because of the really positive changing nature of the entire industry. The industry that I love, when things must go absolutely down, they need to go this economically this down to go right back up. And my favorite people are the ones that take chaos and take these difficult times and adapt. And then you get some of the most innovative, creative, incredible businesses, people, individuals that come out of some of the most tumultuous, horrible, destructive periods of time. And people like myself that were born in wars and displacement, we're actually made for chaos. We're more comfortable in times like this. We're like, oh, then when everything's fine and you're like, why am I happy? Why is nothing happening? So it's actually, weirdly positive about 2023.
Oh, mate. Well, I just want to say a massive thank you. It's been a huge pleasure to talk to you. And you really are one of the most genuinely incredible people in the food industry I've met, because it's not just about the food. You've got such a much deeper reaching self-worth that goes out into communities and spaces. And not for a single minute has it been about making money. It's about making people's lives better and creating money and opportunities for charitable foundations and doing so much much and spreading the word of incredible food and cookery. So, Marissa, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and I can't wait to hear your recipe for
Cobbly Palau.
And it is, I mean, honestly, it sounds fantastic. Marissa, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been amazing.
Guys, thank you so much for listening. And please don't forget, you can listen to the bonus cook-along recipe. For more details, see bbcgoodfood.com/podcast. See you next time. Bye.